He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the 73rd Hole. I'm Colby Powell, Taylor Williams, along with me, as always. We've got a great show for you today. I want to remind everyone to go follow us on social media, on Twitter, at the 73rd Hole. Instagram is 73rd Hole. And then on Facebook, the 73rd Hole Podcast. We greatly appreciate it. You can follow Taylor and I on Twitter, at T_Williams101 and at Colby J. Powell. All right, today we've got Kelsey Klein joining us once again. He was in with Taylor Gooch last week, who's on the PGA Tour having a great season. And today, Kelsey brought with him Taylor Gooch's caddy, Mal Baker, who we're thrilled to have with us. Kelsey, what's going on?
Thanks for having me again. I'm excited about today's conversation. And, you know, every time I talk with Mal, I learn something about golf and about caddying. So it's going to be a nice afternoon here and talking with him.
Yeah, Mal, we're thrilled to have you. And, you know, my co-host here, Taylor Williams, not Taylor Gooch, was a phenomenal junior player, and I've caddied for him. I don't know. How many times have I caddied for you, Taylor? 30, 40?
Yeah, somewhere around there, maybe even 50.
Yeah, somewhere like that, a bunch of times. So I have a great respect for the caddies. I appreciate what the caddies do. I appreciate the caddies having to deal with the different moods of the players. So I'm thrilled to talk to you today, and I kind of want to know, how did you get started as a caddy? Where did kind of your love for the game originate, and then how did you kind of get started and make your way up to the PGA Tour as a caddy?
I started playing golf when I was pretty young. But I turned pro myself when I was 20, and I played professionally on the Australian Tour and in Asia and around the South Pacific, and I did that for 13 years. So I had a pretty long playing career, I wasn't doing as good as I wanted to do. And a local guy from here in Dallas, a guy named Greg Chalmers, who had a very long career on the PGA Tour, still bouncing around out there. We grew up together at the same golf course, and had a pretty good friendship there for a while. And we were just having a catch-up dinner at the end of 2003. He was telling me about the fact that he was in search for a new caddy, and I'd kind of exhausted myself trying to do better at golf and offered to do it. And that's kind of how it all got started.
Yeah, that's a great story there, Mal, about kind of how everything got started there. So once you got on the bag with him, kind of take us through that transition and, how many years have you been doing this now? And then how'd you get make your way onto Taylor's bag?
Well, let's see. I started in 2004. Was the first year I worked for Greg, and I worked for him for about 9.5 years or so. So we had a pretty good long run there together. Had some success around the place, when we decided to move on to some different stuff together, March I think of about 2013, I think. I did some work for a few different guys around the place. I worked with Charlie Wee for a little while. Caddied for Tom Hoagie for a while. I did some work for John Rollins. Worked for KJ Choi for a while. And actually, back in 1996, I came over to the U.S. With Ian Baker Finch and caddied for him his last season on the PGA Tour. I was struggling at home with my own game. And knew Ian pretty well, and we got talking. I thought I might be able to learn some stuff that had helped me. I've kind of bounced around a little bit, since I worked for Greg for all of those years. I had a little bit of time off caddying there for a little bit to deal with a couple of health issues, which, are all behind me now. I'm fighting fit. But when I decided to come back again, I wanted to take a different direction with my caddying career, because I found that I was working with a lot of guys that were perhaps in the second half of their career, rather than some guys that, were full of energy and in the first part. So I got hooked up with Taylor's agent, Jeff Stacey, and Jeff said, "Hey, you got to go meet this kid. He's really good. He's just got his card on the web.com tour as it was back then." And So that's kind of how it all started. So that was the beginning of 2017, and Taylor and I got together for a game of golf out at the TPC at Craig Ranch here in Dallas, and just kind of been the way it's been ever since. You know, we've been working together for a bit over 3 years now, and things have been going well for us.
Yeah, no doubt. Taylor's playing phenomenal golf. And Kelsey, I'm curious. So you've known Taylor Gooch nearly his entire life. So I'm sure whenever Mal Baker came along, you both met and you kind of had your opinions, your first impressions and all those things. So when Taylor got hooked up with Mal, what was kind of your first impression as to what you saw in Mal Baker whenever he came onto Taylor's bag?
You can be on the tail.
Great question. You know, I remember back in early 17 when Taylor was going to go down and meet Mal and play. You know, we talked about it, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Taylor was going to maybe talk to two different caddies. So obviously, when Mal and Taylor met up there down in at Craig Ranch, I think it speaks to Mal's, you know, ability, his character, and the guy that he is. Because I don't think Taylor ever made that second interview, which obviously has turned out to be a positive thing for everybody involved in his career. Fast forward to, mid part of 2017, Taylor and Mal are having a great year on the web tour, obviously now the Corn Ferry Tour. And Mal, I don't think we met before Knoxville or even after that, if I'm thinking right. Mal had to go back home, had a family situation back to Australia after they finished second over in Springfield. I want to say 24, 25 under, played great. And Mal had to go back to Australia, so I caddied for Taylor for a week in Australia or at Knoxville, and I think that's kind of where Mal and I's, you know, friendship, you know, talking and texting, and you know, I asked him, you know, some different things about Taylor's game because I hadn't been out there with him during that time, so you know, we talked before that tournament a lot, and I was able to get some, you know, get some pointers for him on Taylor. You know, it wasn't, you know, the state AM qualifier, it wasn't the US Amateur qualifier, you know, it was Taylor's well being and living, and obviously their momentum that they had built all through that summer. I'm going to say with the Knoxville event and the three or four prior events, I want to say Taylor was 71 under par for that month straight, which, you know, fortunately, I didn't kill the momentum, but, you know, Mal and I's relationship, you know, from a daily or weekly or every couple of days standpoint, I think after that week of Knoxville, when he got back into the States, you know, it helped he and I's friendship blossom. And we first met January of 18 out at Torrey Pines. My wife and I went out. I have a friend who has a quote-unquote summer home out there, and it worked out perfect. We had sushi one night. And near where they were staying, and we met and hit it off from the start. And, you know, coming from my background in you know, college golf and then into caddying for my college roommate, Hunter Haas, on tour and the web tour, probably, I don't know, 15 events total between the two tours. And then into coaching golf, you know, 2 years at Oklahoma Christian, as you know, T-Dub. I have such a respect and an admiration for Mal and for the guys that caddy on a weekly and yearly basis. You know, we all know the guys that you can recognize off TV that have been doing it for 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years. You know, Fluff, I think, has probably been out there over 30 years. The travel, the ups and downs, the heartaches, the, you know, there's, you know, caddies can understand this. You know, when I watch an event, and let's say somebody who's tied for third makes double on the last hole. Well, I always think about the caddy first, you know, because we all know there's percentages and there's bonuses and all those things. And when a guy doubles 18 to go from, you know, tied for third to 15th, you know, it makes me want to cry for him. You know, I've been out there, you know, having done it a little bit. Hunter and I lost in a playoff in Wichita in 2004. We got in a four-way playoff. We three-putted 18 in regulation and three-putted 18 in the playoff. And I wanted to dive in the bunker. I wanted to dive in the bunker and cry like a school kid. You know, I think at the time it probably cost me $8,000 or $9,000. But you know, so you know, there part of a tour player's success or failure is probably anybody. You know, the stuff that goes on off the golf course, and you know, the partner, the teammate that they are to those guys out on tour, the amount of time they spend together, the relationship and friendship that they have, and Taylor and Mal have developed a fantastic friendship and respect. And back to the original question, I know I got off topic there a little bit, but when Mal and I met, you know, at Torrey Pines in 18, it was, you know, we went right into it like we'd known each other for 20 years. So it was smooth sailing from there.
Yeah, and you mentioned a great word there, Kelsey, when you were talking about there. And you mentioned chemistry, you know, and that's something that definitely, you know, Colby mentioned he caddied for me. And we obviously had a great chemistry. And then, you know, Kelsey, you caddied for your great friend, Hunter Haas, and then caddied for Taylor, you know. So, obviously, y'all had a great chemistry there going well. And so, I'm curious from Mal's perspective, you know, caddying for so many different individuals, like you mentioned, Greg, Charlie Wee, Ian Baker Finch, you know, how were you able to build chemistry with those guys, kind of like the relationships that we were able to have?
Well, you know, I think it's just a case of you kind of hang around somebody enough, you get to figure out whether or not you like each other and you think the same way, whether or not you feel the same way about golf. But, you know, from my perspective, you know, when I caddy, and Taylor and I talk about this a lot, but, you know, golfers are funny characters. And, you know, to me, one of the things I think more about than anything is that a player's got to, it's more important the guy's comfortable than he is right, more often than not. You know, obviously there's times where you just can't make certain mistakes. But for the most part, you know, you're better off choosing a shot that the guy knows that he can hit. And so once you establish that kind of rapport with a player and you start to learn more about what he can and can't do, and you can start to see the things that maybe he's not prepared to talk about, because, you know, they've all got to protect their own egos and self-esteems and such. You start to learn things like that, and then in response, the guys will start to appreciate that you know them well enough to not have to have them tell you when they're uncomfortable or, you know, or want to have to talk all the time. You know, one of the things that Taylor and I have been able to establish over the time we've worked together is that, you know, every golf course is going to have certain shots that push somebody's buttons. And, you know, we just talk about different ways to get through it, and we agree philosophically. So I think having worked for different guys and sort of being able to couple that with the only, you know, the experience I had myself of playing for so long, you can start to just create a relationship that way. I'm not necessarily sure if that's answered your question quite clearly enough, but, you know, for me, it's about getting to learn to know each other and then being able to react to each other such that you can get the job done in the best way the player possibly needs.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I'm curious about, you know, you bounce around to these different guys. When I would caddy for Taylor Williams here when we were younger, you know, we've known each other since we were 10 years old. So I kind of knew how to deal with the ups and the downs. You know, when you're on a heater, you've made three birdies in a row and you really get rolling and have to stay in the zone. Or on the contrary, whenever you've maybe made a bad bogey from the trees and then you three putted the next hole and now you're on tilt walking to the tee box and you've got to figure out, can you still have a logical conversation? Because all the emotions of golf sometimes take over. So kind of with Taylor Gooch out on the PGA Tour, how do you deal with the range of emotions? Do you kind of have a playbook, you think, to, okay, things are going wrong, I need to kind of get in his head this way to get it turned around, or things are rolling, I really need to stay out of his way and just kind of let him keep going? How do you deal with the emotional swings that just naturally come with the game of golf?
You know, I've been blessed beyond the description of it to get to work for a guy like Taylor. He has developed into such a professional when it comes to this, and he understands that he doesn't have the freedom to indulge himself in excesses of emotion, be they positive or negative. You know, he also understands the process of becoming a great player. You know, it's a lifetime deal. It's not going to happen this week or this hole or next week or next month. You know, it's something that's going to happen to you over a lifetime. And in that lifetime, you're going to make a whole bunch of double bogeys and a whole bunch of eagles and everything in between. So working for Taylor, that's not a huge challenge for me personally to have to find things, you know, to say or to do to get him back in the right place. I mean, in 3 years, I might have felt like I had to do something like that maybe twice a year at the most. What I try to do the most as I possibly can for Taylor is to be exactly the same. Every hole we walk to, be it the first hole or the 72nd hole, and whether we're running first, third, 30th, or 70th, or 110th. You know, I try to just do my job exactly the same. I try and walk the same speeds. I try and think about the same things, talk about the same things. I try to never go quiet. I never try and talk too much. You know, just try and be the same all the time. And that, you know, in my opinion, will help to give him stability. So, you know, that's, but like I said, there are other guys I've worked for that needed a bit of pumping up or a little calming down.
Who needed again, calming down, kind of, if you don't mind me asking? Who ran a little hot and needed you to dial him back in?
Look, I'm not sure that it would be professional of me to go telling you about guys.
I understand.
You know, the between the ropes stuff, but, you know, I've worked with some guys that would get a little hot under the collar and, you know, cause themselves to make some mistakes. What I typically default to in a circumstance like that is a fairly quiet, passive, you know, attempt to remind them of what their job is at the moment. And then maybe at the end of the round, you know, I'll have a chat with them and say, listen, this is something we got to work on. You can't afford to be, you know, indulging yourself like that because the guys you're trying to beat don't. You know, but I see that, you know, development of a person's personality and attitude as being every bit as important as how they improve their golf swing or their putting stroke or their fitness regime or what they eat. You know, that development of guys' mental aptitude and strength and control is every bit as important as every other part of their game.
There's no doubt about that. Maybe, you know, even probably, you know, that might lead into everything else, you know, leading to success, just like you mentioned, Mal. And, you know, I kind of want to bring both y'all in on this question here. You know, now that we've kind of talked about, you know, the, you know, mental side of it, you know, how to handle bad situations, good situations, I'm kind of curious, you know, on from a, you know, a tip, just a typical week basis, you know, like how much, and Kelsey, when you caddy for Hunter or when you caddy for Taylor in Knoxville or any other events, you know, how much involvement do you have when it comes to, you know, like course strategy before the round, you know, determining, you know, how to play holes, what clubs to hit off tee boxes. Do you have much say in that, or is that really up to the player's discretion? And then also, too, when you're during the course of competition, you know, like reading greens and picking lines off tee boxes, you know, things like that. How much involvement do you have on that end of it when it comes to the player's preparation, I guess, would be the way to phrase it?
I'll let Mal take that one.
Well, you know, for Taylor and I, we're fortunate enough, we think fairly similar. One of the things that I feel like I brought to the table when I, you know, when I started with Taylor is experience. And again, I don't view necessarily golf as being a, you know, a daily or weekly thing. It's a career thing. And so we try and set, you know, course strategies to take the heat off as much as possible. Now, you know, Taylor Gooch is one of the greatest iron players in the world. So, you know, we have the luxury of perhaps being a little more defensive from the tee box, you know. So if we get to a hole where it's a maybe, maybe not kind of deal, we're going to figure that over the 4 days of the tournament and then, you know, the year and the career, if we take the heat off from the tee a little bit, we're going to still get plenty of looks at making birdies. You know, so that's kind of stuff we talk about before the tournament, during practice rounds and in preparation. But, you know, you do that with the understanding that everything's kind of fluid. You know, everything can change from day to day because of how players feel about their game. You know, maybe today they've got the left or right shot, they feel super comfortable with it, and certain tee shots will now open up because that's what's needed. Or sometimes they got the right to left shot going and then the wind has changed that day, and so, you know, a shot might look different to them. So, you know, while you have plans about how you're going to play the golf course, you know, from a strategy perspective, it is always fluid, even though you might go out with a basic idea of how you're going to do it. You know, but ultimately we feel like, you know, at the level that these guys are playing at on the PGA Tour, golf's a game of bogeys, not birdies. Which might surprise some people to say, but you know, these guys, and especially a guy like Taylor Gooch, he's going to make enough birdies to contend every week. It's the weeks you keep bogeys off the card are the weeks that you do well. And so we try and set our strategy up in that way, just generally speaking.
Yes, and that's completely, you're completely right there, Mal. You know, I actually saw a stat a couple of days ago that said that, just on for a tour player will make a double bogey or worse like 2.5% of the time, and they'll only eagle a hole like 0.4% of the time. So the amount of holes and times that you have increased strokes, you have to make that many more birdies to add up. So avoiding bogeys is more essential than making birdies, in my opinion. I completely agree with you there. And is there anything that you would like to add, Kelsey, to what Mel said about kind of his and how him and Taylor interact?
Well, you know, he explained it very well. I mean, you know, a lot of guys, you know, in my circle of friends and customers, you know, that know that Taylor and I are close, you know, they ask me a lot about him. And, you know, some of them even watch the Tour app and they're watching yardages and how far he's hitting driver because everybody likes to see that. And a couple of the guys who really pay attention ask me a lot. And like Mal said, I mean, Taylor's such a great iron player that, you know, he can be more conservative off tees. But at the same time, and Mal knows this much better than me, I caddied for Taylor 2 weeks at the end of the 18 season on tour. So it was Reno and the Wyndham over in North Carolina, I believe. And what any golfer or even really good golfer locally can't fathom is how much more firm the golf course gets from, we'll say, Tuesday or Wednesday, you know, on a Friday afternoon. If you go early, late, you're playing Friday afternoon, the golf courses are so firm off the tees, you know, and into the greens as far as around the greens and runoff, that strategy, like Mal said, you have to understand that part of it, which was a real eye-opener for me. I know for sure at the Wyndham, I think Mal and I probably talked during that week about the case of that, because, you know, there was a couple of holes in the practice round where I thought, you know, maybe we'll hit driver, maybe 3-wood here, and we would hit hybrid off the tee. You know, and how much shorter certain holes play as far as if it's a dog leg, you know, and normally I think, man, we'll hit 3-wood, and if we don't turn it, we'll be fine. And in the tournament, you know, Friday or Saturday, that ball runs through the fairway into the rough, and you're going, man, you know. So being aware of that, and Mal and I talk during the weeks a lot of times, and I'll ask him about certain shots where I'm watching on the app. And to understand, you know, man, what y'all do there? What happened there? Or, man, that tee shot was perfect. What was it? And it's amazing on a weekly and daily basis of all the different grasses and all the different golf courses that Mal and Taylor are on, you know, how sharp the mind has to be in order to put themselves in a position to eliminate bogeys, like Mal said. Because on tour, I mean, you watch, most bogeys are made because of tee balls. I mean, guys aren't missing many greens with, you know, 7, 8, 9 iron wedges. You don't see a ton of 3-putts on tour, as you guys know. I mean, and so, you know, the tee ball, as we all know, is, in my opinion, the most important part of golf.
I completely agree, Kelsey.
And there's got to be weeks at certain courses, and Mal can speak to it, that, you know, maybe like a TPC at Sawgrass or certain places where it's, you know, they get done with a round and it's mentally, you know, they're mentally drained because they have to stay so sharp. You know, I went to Houston in the fall where Taylor and Mal finished tied for fourth. And the second round, Taylor's leading the golf tournament, you know, through, you know, the first day and probably half of the second round. The wind decides to switch. I'm out there in a golf shirt and shorts. It switches out of the north and it's blowing 30. And, I feel like an Eskimo, you know. And so Mal, obviously, from being on the bag, you know, 15 minutes before it's blown out of the south, all of a sudden the weather moves in and switches. Well, it's a completely different golf course. I want to say on 18 that day, Mal, some of the listeners, you know, and maybe Taylor, you, Colby, have been to Redstone. It's now Golf Club of Houston. That 18th hole, I want to say Taylor hit his lowest, hardest 3-wood and maybe a hybrid into that green. And yep. With the other end, it was the other the other wind is 3-wood wedge.
Exactly.
Things like that as it goes on, and I was fortunate to be there and watch the four rounds up close. And heck, I was just watching and I was mentally drained. So it's a game of, you know, game of repetition. Mal's been around, you know, played a lot or been, you know, on bags and been to a lot of those courses. So when Taylor got to the tour, you know, he had the confidence and the calmness about his situation. You know, my guy's been out here for 10 or 15 years. Mal has seen these courses. He's seen the grasses. He knows some of the greens and all those things to where Taylor immediately was more comfortable than he would have been because Mal had already done that and been there. You know, and experience, as we all know, is invaluable. And a player caddy situation for that comfort level and that, you know, that education side, you know, Mal's benefited Taylor so much. I mean, Taylor would be the one that could tell you how much, but I'm certain it's a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, yeah, Taylor – yeah, go ahead, Mal, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if I could just jump in there, just, you know, to what Kels, you know, was just saying there about the way the golf courses change. You know, one of the things that we do very much at the start of the week is kind of study the weather and figure out, you know, what we're going to be looking at for the week. Because, you know, typically Monday and Tuesday, the golf course is unlikely to look anything at all like what it's going to look on Saturday and Sunday. You know, so we kind of prepare in advance for different winds and such. And practice rounds are often not really about playing the golf course in the circumstance you get to. It's about walking around talking about what we're likely to face in the coming days. You know, and Bay Hill there this year, you know, was a great example of that. I mean, it was an absolutely brutally difficult golf course for the week. It would have been very difficult with no wind. But it was blowing hard all week. But we got the wind coming in a different direction almost every single day. You know, and so when we're out there for our practice round at the start of the week, it was coming out of its normal southeast, and it was pretty friendly, you know, not blowing real hard. But we knew by the weekend coming around it was going to be out in some corner of the north. You know, so on every given day, the course might play different. But when you see it on Tuesday, it's essentially only about the guy standing there and getting comfortable with the way everything looks to him again. It's almost pointless from the perspective of trying to simulate what might be about to happen on the weekend.
Yeah, Mal Baker and Kelsey Klein with us here. And like you said, Taylor's a phenomenal iron player. I am not. So if I'm on a golf course near you, you need to have McRae Roofing on speed dial. Their commitment to craft is what defines McRae Roofing and exteriors. McRae Roofing is a locally owned and operated roofing service company that is passionate about the quality of their roof creations. Jeff McRae, owner of McRae Roofing, views your roof like a canvas. His team's sole purpose is to create you a masterpiece of a roof, which brings out the beauty of your home and its surroundings. A beauty that will last for years to come. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000 or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. Now, Mal, whenever we had Taylor Gooch on with us last week, he said that Bay Hill were the toughest conditions he's played in his young PGA Tour career. Where does that kind of rank for you? I know you've been doing this for nearly two decades. You've seen a ton of things, a ton of different courses under a ton of different conditions. Where does Bay Hill a few weeks back rank for you?
You know, I have a hard time remembering any that were more difficult or more challenging, you know, just from a number of different perspectives. But, you know, because it was extremely windy, you know, it was difficult to get your ball in the fairway. You know, and there's a lot of water around Bay Hill, you know, and the greens were quite firm and really quite fast. I mean, they're Bermuda grass greens down there. And when Bermuda gets really dry, you know, and at the start of the week it was rolling at 11, you know, it gets really, really dry as the week goes on. All of a sudden, certain pin positions, you can't go anywhere near them and all the rest. So I thought Bay Hill was maybe as difficult as any as I've seen, you know, and I think the example of that was probably, you know, I think it was either 3 or 4 under won the tournament. You know, and after we had
Tyrrell Hatton
won
it at 4 under. There were only 4 players under par in the entire field.
Right. Well, I think Taylor Gooch was the only player under par for the weekend.
He was.
Yep. And you know, I think testimony to that is that we made the cut right on the number and shot 1 under on the weekend, and then ended up running 13th. And had it not been for a nasty gust from the gods on the 16th hole, we probably would have run 5th. You know, and that's for me, shooting one under on the weekend and going from, you know, barely making the cut to finishing way up there, you know. And at one point, I got to be honest, you know, I felt like if we had some kind of great finish to the tournament, we might have set a score that could have won. I mean, things were like that tight. But we actually only shot one under for the weekend. So that should really speak to how difficult it was. You know, I've been to some US Opens that were pretty tough, but I think Bay Hill was the equal of any of them.
Yeah, you mentioned it right there. You know, it's like I said, that's the kind of stuff that you see in the elite tough major championships, you know, an open championship with horrible weather or even U.S. Open conditions, like you said. Nothing that you see in just your, you know, general PGA Tour, normal tour event. And so that brings me to my next question, Mal. You know, what are there, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. Are there any courses or venues that, you know, that just for yourself that you get excited about going, either just because you like the beauty of it or, you know it well, your players have had success there when you've caddied for them? Are there any other courses or venues that you look forward to going to each year?
You know, there are. I mean, I tend to really like golf courses that bring out the best players in the game, because we play a lot of golf courses that are not necessarily what you might call challenging for the guys that are that good. You know, you and I and those of us that still struggle to get the ball to go anywhere near where looking, they might seem challenging. But for the guys that are this good, you know, when you start looking at the 20 and 25 under weeks, they're not really inspiring. So I love places like Torrey Pines. And, you know, not only is it aesthetically beautiful, it's a very tranquil place to walk around. It's an incredibly good golf course, you know, and it asks something of every part of your game. I love Riviera. I think that's an incredibly wonderful golf course. It asks a little bit of everything. You know, you only ever see really great players win there. You know, I actually, one that might surprise some guys is I love the golf course in Tampa at Innisbrook.
I think that's an underrated golf course. The Snake Pit, I mean, that's always a tough course. Rarely does double digits under win there.
Yeah, it is a very underrated golf course. I think it's a very, very good test. You know, so any of the courses that are going to kind of challenge you a little more, you know, typically from a golf course perspective, you know, they're the kind of places I'm going to like more than any other. But, you know, there are some tournaments that are just really good fun, you know. Like the tournament in Connecticut there at the Travelers in Hartford, you know, the finish to that tournament is wonderful, and it's just always a really great atmosphere around there. I always look forward to going there. You know, obviously the players, is a tournament other than, you know, none that you've seen before. You know, Augusta is always a very special place to go. I've got some tremendous memories there. You know, when I was working for Ian Baker Finch, he had won the British Open 5 years before, so we got to play there. You know, and he played a practice round with Seve while we were out there, and, you know, we got to spend some time with Payne Stewart.
Oh, that is so cool. So,
you know, and just walking around Augusta is always, you know, if you're truly a guy with golf running through your veins, you know, it's like hallowed turf. St. Andrews is the same way. I've never been fortunate enough to caddy in a British Open at St. Andrews, but I've worked at that Dunhill Links tournament there a few times. And again, if you've got golf in your blood like I do, you just can't help but feel good walking around there.
Yeah, one thing I'm kind of curious about, how do you feel about Phoenix? Because Phoenix is something different than we see at any other tour stop. It really is a party, especially there on the 16th. Do you like that? Do you embrace it just for the 1 week? How do you feel about that kind of atmosphere?
I enjoy it 1 week of the year. You know, I don't think I'd like to see that any more than 1 week of the year. You know, it is very different, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all. You know, I don't feel like I'm a downer about it or anything. I just don't think, you know, with golf being the game it is and the kind of history that it has, and, you know, it just sets itself a little apart from a lot of the other sports. You know, so I wouldn't want to see it any more than once a year, but for that 1 week of the year, it's great fun. And we get to walk around the inside of the ropes too, so the anarchy that goes on outside, you know, doesn't affect us. We get to walk around everywhere and there's a place for us to go, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, so one thing I want to know too, you know, whenever I used to caddy for Taylor Williams, I play golf. I play recreationally. I'm about a 5 handicap. I play in tournaments at my club. And I don't really get nervous when I play. There's not that much on the line. I'm not that good anyway. Who cares? When I would caddy, I would get so nervous. It everything was out of my control. I couldn't help on a 4-footer or 5-footer. Once we'd read it and I'd backed off, I would stand there and be so nervous watching him hit that putt. And I'm wondering for you as a caddy, and Kelsey, I want to know too, after Mal answers, how nervous do you get as a caddy watching your player hit those little knee knockers or like at Bay Hill whenever you're coming down the stretch and trying to get that top 10 finish? How nervous does that make you? And then, Kelsey, how nervous have you always gotten watching Taylor as he's progressed from level to level?
Well, I actually find not having to hit the shot makes me less nervous rather than more nervous because I don't have to hit it. I really enjoy the competitive charge that comes. You know, I played for a very long time. I'm just a very competitive person by nature. So I really get into that part of it. But what I try and do is just remember that I have a very specific job to do. And, you know, much in the same way I expect my player to stick to the process of hitting a great shot, whether it's, you know, shot one on Thursday or, you know, last shot on Sunday. You know, I try and just stick to the process of doing it all. Now, obviously, there's times when certain shots will get your blood pumping a little bit more than others, but I truly can't say that there's any, you know, that really get me any more than any other, because I've had the experience of being nervous watching my guy hit a 3-footer on the first hole some weeks, you know, and I've had the experience of feeling really comfortable watching my guy hit a 20-footer, you know, on the last hole, especially watching Taylor Gooch. That guy always holds great putts late in tournaments to move up the leaderboard or to make a cut on a Friday. You know, he's just got that uncanny knack of knowing how to get it done. So, you know, I don't know if that answers your question, but I try not to get too much wrapped up in it.
Yeah, and then Kelsey, what's it been like for you watching Taylor progress from level to level? How nervous do you get when you're there in person or just following on the app, the different ways that we consume golf?
Well, for me, there's three parts to it. You know, caddying for him a couple of times between the Corn Ferry, now the Corn Ferry and the Tour. The good news is, and Mal knows this, I don't necessarily say I get nervous when I'm caddying because he's a much better player than I am. He's a much better player than Mal is. And so what I get amazed at, you know, being inside the ropes a couple of times is, and I think Mal does the same thing. I always think about, you know, what would I do in this situation or what kind of shot would I try to hit here? And then you actually see Taylor, obviously, or a guy or two in his group, the shots that these guys are able to hit. And it further gives you an appreciation, like Mal said, of how good these guys are. The delicate nature of, you know, of the greens, you know, there's not a lot of room for error on most of those golf courses as far as, you know, short-sighting yourself and some of those things. So, you know, caddying and being up close and personal with it, you know, is one aspect of it. Like I said, being down in Houston, walking all four rounds, I loved it. I got to be honest, it was exhausting. Because I was so focused into it. I don't normally like to go watch golf live, you know, if it's not, you know, if I'm not caddying or playing. And I hope that doesn't sound bad. I love to watch it on TV 4 nights a week, all the reruns and all the stuff going on. But what's different, you know, going to watch Taylor as an example in Houston for the 4 rounds, you know, I care so much and I'm invested in his career and his life and those things that I may watch it like watching him live, you know, better than checking the app and watching it on TV because you get to see every shot. You know, I walk ahead, I cut across, you know, I kind of have a routine about how I do things when I'm there watching live, which makes it, you know, that much more fun. But it's exhausting because when you're watching him and in Houston, he was, you know, at or near the lead most of the tournament, you know, I'm watching one group ahead. If I'm walking, I'm looking at the leaderboard. I'm checking the phone. So, you know, knowing how much one putt matters, or seeing what a guy's made 4 birdies in a row and he's jumped Taylor by 2 shots, it's exhausting in a good way, if that makes sense. And then, you know, watching the app, we all know, you know, the app is frustrating at times, but it's better than nothing. And it's watching the app for me is probably the most nerve wracking because, you know, you're waiting on to update it, you know, and you see something where it says, you know, penalty or the tee shot goes over here, or sometimes when they make an error, I'm like, there's no way he could hit that shot. You're just waiting for it to update to where the shot actually was. And there's been a few times where, you know, I'll talk to Mal the night after a round, or we'll text and I'll say, what happened over there on 12? You know, you guys hit it, you know, dead right in the trees, 240. And, you know, sometimes the scorers mess up whose ball it was. And Mal's been like, no, that was, you know, whoever's golf ball that we were playing with. You know, Taylor was over here. So, you know, some of that stuff kind of, I guess, adds to the excitement / frustration. But all in all, I mean, for me and, you know, Lord willing, Taylor will play the tour for another, you know, 15 or 20 years. I couldn't be more excited. Mal knows this. You know, he and I text, you know, before tournament start. And like I've said, I've run out many a phone battery hitting refresh Thursday to Sunday.
Yes, yeah, and then it's kind of like, you know, Colby said over here, you know, it's just that out of your control feel, you know, because like you said, you're just hitting refresh, and you're waiting for it to come up, and you just never know what's going to happen on the other end. So it can definitely get the adrenaline going for sure. And one thing I'm curious from both of you guys, you know, like Kelsey, you mentioned earlier that every time you've had a conversation with Mal, you've essentially learned something, and you've been a great golf mind for, you know, your entire life. So I'm curious, from your end, what has Mal been able to teach you? Who's so knowledgeable about the game? What has he been able to share with you? And then for Mal, you know, ever since, you know, you said you started in 2004, you know, what have you learned since day one to now that, you know, you can't really, you know, you couldn't really teach someone, you know, it's maybe just one of those things that experience is the only way to learn.
On my side of things, I mean, watching Mal and Taylor's path and their career together grow, I mean, I want this to come out right. I mean, it's an understanding of the partnership that they have and the knowledge that they're gaining each day and each week and each year, you know, that Taylor stays out there, like Mal said, you know, becoming a great player is a career thing. It's a lifetime effort. You know, I've said this many times to younger players. I mean, your golf career isn't about a high school tournament or the state championship or about a college tournament. You know, golf is about the process and about, you know, the bumps along the way and the success and the failure. You know, you're not practicing and putting all the hard work in for any one tournament. You know, you're doing it so you can have a lifetime or a career worth of memories, both good and bad, that make up that career. So, you know, Mal, like you said, they think long term. They have a game plan and you know, his approach, I think, fits the way Taylor thinks. Like he said, I think that's why they've done so well the last 3 years. And, you know, the way that Mal thinks about golf and thinks about the different golf courses, it's in such detail. You know, I don't want to say he leaves nothing to chance, but he's engaged in what's going on. He's on top of his game about things. So that carries over into me. If I ever go caddy again or caddy for somebody else, to take some of the things that, you know, he's taught me and mentioned, or, you know, look for this or look for that, you know, that you can't get by reading a book or watching on TV, because, you know, most of the time on TV, you don't hear the caddy saying anything. You know, you may hear, you know, this is the yardage, but it's not a situation where you can delve into their brain and into their heart and into their mind to understand, like, what's it like, or what were you guys thinking right there? Or why did you pull that club? Or, you know, what was the thought process going into those last three holes when you knew you were, you know, you needed to make a birdie to make the cut, or, you know, you needed to, you know, finish the last three holes even par to have a top 10. So, you know, it's a mixed bag of sorts of education that I've learned from Mal, but, you know, it's benefited me both in my personal golf game, my enjoyment of watching them, and, you know, if I ever caddy again for Taylor or somebody else, you know, there's knowledge to be had there too.
And then Mal, on the other side of that, kind of, what have you learned throughout the years since you first got into it that you feel like you're a better caddy now than you were when you started?
You know, I think I just understand people better. I understand the game a little better. You know, I think golf a lot in the large part when it comes to a person's career, stress is really rough. It doesn't matter what your job is or how you live. Stress is really hard on people. And in golf, you're going to enjoy a lot of stress. You're going to endure it. You may or may not enjoy it, I guess. That was a poor choice of words. But you're going to endure a lot of stress. And you can't see a lot of that from the outside. And I think trying to explain to people how taking the pressure off in the course of somebody's career is of great importance when they're young, so that they can still be doing it when they get older. And it kind of goes a little bit back to the strategy that, when you asked the strategy question earlier, when we set up, course strategies and all that sort of stuff, we try and take the pressure off a lot, because people's nervous systems can only take just so much, and over the years, the way some guys play it, you just know they're not going to last much past their early to mid-30s in the game, because they play such a stressful way that sooner or later it's going to break down on them. And so watching somebody from the outside and how they're managing their emotions and their feelings. I mean, golf swings will come and go. People can get into and out of different patterns and routines. People's bodies change, and so everything evolves. But the one thing that's constant is their brain. And so protecting somebody's brain, but also figuring out what is causing each person to be who they are and make the choices that they are, I think maybe that's a skill that would be very difficult to teach. You could explain it as much as you like, but until you stand there and you watch and you've interacted with a number of different people, and perhaps this is where, a playing history like the one that I have was a little more helpful to me, because I've actually experienced the feelings that players had, and have through varying times. From that perspective, as well as, just some of my general understanding of watching golf for a lot of times, that those are the kind of things that it's difficult to teach or to explain. It's more of an instinct, but, figuring out how to make everything easier for an individual is probably the one thing I would say that is difficult to explain.
A lot of great stuff so far from both Mal and Kelsey. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof. It is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back in on the 73rd hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you as always. And today we are joined by Mal Baker and Kelsey Klein. They're back with us. Glad to have these guys. Mal is on Taylor Gooch's bag. We had Taylor on with us last week. He was phenomenal, and Mal and Taylor are having a great season. And Mal, one thing I'm kind of curious about is, the players get all the headlines, the players get all the fame, and that's kind of the way it goes. But every now and then you see a caddy pop up in the headlines. You have the situation last year with Matt Kuchar down in Mexico, where they had the agreement before the tournament, and then he wins, and then it turns into this major headline. And then you've got the Patrick Reed incident down in Australia at the President's Cup. I'm just curious, for you as a caddy looking in from the outside, how does it make you feel whenever you see caddies in the national news? And is that something that you kind of pay attention to? It's not an everyday occurrence, but every now and then a caddy makes big headline news.
Well, I don't think it'd be fair of me to speak for any other caddy about how they might feel about it. I can tell you that my own personal philosophy, is that you know, is that the caddy should be as invisible as possible to a large degree. You know, now, there's circumstances where that's not going to be possible, you know, and sometimes it's positive and sometimes it's a negative. You know, I remember when, you know, when Pepsi Steve was getting into it with Jimenez there, I can't remember the tournament. It was might have been a Ryder Cup maybe or something, working for Keegan Bradley, you know, and there was an incident. Well, Pepsi was standing up for his man and making sure that the right thing was being done and nobody was taking advantage of the rules or anything. And I felt proud for him because he did his job. You know, he stood up for his player. And I think that brought attention to a caddy in a positive light. But, you know, there have been some circumstances where perhaps, you know, it didn't so much. You know, and so, like I said, I mean, I tend to feel like caddies should be as invisible as possible. You know, at the end of the day, it really is all about the player. You know, they're the ones that make or break the team. You know, caddies don't have jobs without players. I'd like to think that everybody would be professional enough to behave accordingly, but we work in an emotional, you know, in an emotional environment. You know, you mentioned Patrick Reed's caddy getting into it with one of the spectators at the President's Cup. And, you know, it's easy to sit back and say that's a mistake, you know, and you wish it never happened. But I think it was handled correctly by the tour. They didn't make a big deal out of it, you know, in as much as carrying it on with any suspensions or anything. They just asked him not to come out the last day. But I can see how that could happen. You know, you're standing up for your guy. I mean, you can argue all you want about whether or not Patrick was in the right or the wrong out there in the Bahamas and all the rest of it. And, you know, unfortunately for him, you know, he was heading off to Australia the next time. And being an Australian, I can tell you that he was in the wrong place for somebody that was having, let's say, some questionable behaviours coming out of the Bahamas. So he was always just going to get absolutely, you know, harassed the entire week because that's just the Australian way. But, you know, I think you got to take each situation. But as much as we possibly should, you know, we should be the, you know, the invisible party when it comes to the golf team.
Yeah, that's definitely good stuff there. Oh, yeah, definitely go ahead, Kelsey. I was just going to mention we brought up the Miguel and Keegan thing. That happened in 2015 at the match play, WGC match play, because I remember that very vividly happened, and that was a big deal. And from our end, it was very entertaining to watch. So I just wanted to let the listeners know out there, you know, exactly when that happened. But go ahead, Kelsey.
Yeah. I want to add a little tidbit to what Mal said regarding that caddy. You know, he said Pepsi Steve, which – you know, rolled off his tongue, and Mal didn't think much about it. But to the listeners, I learned about Pepsi Steve in 2010 in Springfield, which Mal knows that tournament's in August, and we all know in Springfield it's about 110 heat index in Springfield. And Pepsi Steve got the nickname because the guy drinks so much Pepsi that before the rounds, he hides Pepsi around the golf course instead of putting them in the bag, so he doesn't weigh the bag down. And in, like I said, Springfield that year,
that's brilliant.
I was living in St. Louis. Yeah, I was living in St. Louis at the time. And my college roommate and close friend Hunter Hoff was playing the web tour at the time. I drove over to watch him on the end of Thursday afternoon and Friday, and he played great. I had to go back to St. Louis on Saturday. And I want to say he was leading or one off the lead going into Sunday, so I drove back. Well, Hunter ended up winning the golf tournament, but the funny part about Pepsi Steve is it got so hot, and he drank so much Pepsi, he was actually caddying for Keegan Bradley at the time, I believe, and he passed out. They had to stretcher him off the golf course, and Keegan yanked somebody out of the crowd to caddy for him, because Pepsi obviously is Pepsi Steve, so that's a funny caddy story or moment, you know, where he got the nickname, and he's continued on, and is caddying the tour currently, I believe. But, you know, respect to the guy for taking up for his player, like Mal said. But Pepsi Steve has earned his nickname by probably drinking more Pepsi than anybody this side of Las Vegas.
That's a great story there, Kelson. Thank you for sharing that. That gets a good laugh there. Go ahead, Mal.
For anybody that's never seen Pepsi, he's about like a two iron shaft with some ears on him. He's as skinny as a rake, and it drives us all crazy because he does nothing but drink soda and he stays skinny all the time.
That's funny because I know if I drink soda, I can look down my love hand. I can just watch them grow. So, you know, that's so there's definitely two ends of that spectrum for sure. And you guys have been fabulous today. And thank y'all for sharing. I just got a couple more quick questions before we get y'all out of here. First one would be for you, Mal. And it would be, you know, if I came up to you or, you know, I had a friend or someone or just someone walked up to you and said, I want to become a PGA Tour caddy. You know, how would you recommend them doing that besides just knowing a player that got on the tour? And then my last question would be, you know, we all know about like player penalties, you know, like, you know, if the ball moves and the rule changes and all this stuff. What are like the caddy rules, I guess, you know, are there any type of penalties or anything, you know, like if a bunker doesn't get raked correctly or anything like that, any kind of like, you know, something that people don't think about very much, but yet you guys have to keep a constant eye on.
First part of your question there, as far as becoming a caddy, I'm going to make the assumption that, you know, the kind of people you're talking about already know enough about the game that they could conduct themselves on a golf course. You know, typically guys like that, you know, have come from maybe some club caddying and so on. But there really is no, you know, if you don't know somebody, there really is no way around it other than to just show up at some tournaments and introduce yourself to the caddy master or whoever might be running the caddy tent for that particular week, you know, every week, but, you know, be it a Corn Ferry event or a tour event, you're probably not ever going to be fresh and walk up to a tour event and get a job. I mean, the days of guys standing in the parking lot getting a job on the PGA Tour are long gone. Not so much on the Corn Ferry Tour, although even there, those sort of opportunities are slowly disappearing. You know, the only really way to do it if you don't know somebody is to get out there and put your name forward, you know, and then do the best you can when you get the opportunity. And for anybody, you know, it's a bit of a learning curve, you know, because professional golf at the highest level is very, very different, you know, to any of the other golf that you might have experienced. You know, to your second question, there are a lot of rules that that caddies can break and cause issues for their player on. You know, I mean, essentially when you're a part of the team, you know, there is, you're as responsible for not breaking the rules as the player is. You mentioned not breaking the bunker earlier. Well, that's not a rule. But if you don't do your job breaking the bunker properly and somebody gets a bad lie and complains about it, you can be sure the tour official's coming over to let you know that you got to do a better job. But there are a lot of rules in golf that are fairly subtle that people might not know. You know, and I guess maybe we all get a little bit focused on our own ones. One of the ones that I have a very intense awareness of is where I lay the golf bag down when we're around the green. Because if I happen to lay the bag down directly on the line that Taylor's about to putt along, well, that can be a penalty. Now, it's probably pretty rare anybody's going to actually mention that or even notice, quite honestly, but it is a rule of the game. I can't put the golf bag down on his through line or behind him, so I'm aware of that. But, you know, when you walk into, you know, bunkers and things like that, you're not allowed to be seen to be testing the sand, although these days the rules have changed so much as far as hazards go that, quite honestly, they're really not hazards anymore. You know, it's just a different option. You know, different options for taking a drop if you can't hit it. But essentially, there's no such thing as a hazard anymore. You know, but, you know, if you stand on his ball because it's in long rough and you don't see it, well, that's a penalty. You know, if you happen to leave an extra club in the bag, which has happened plenty of times before, you know, maybe he was working his way between a couple of three woods or wedges or drivers or whatever. You know, if you leave a club in the bag, that's a penalty. So, you know, the caddies are, you know, as responsible for not breaking the rules as the players are. So you better know the rules.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Mal, one thing I'm kind of curious about, and this is the last one I've got, during this hiatus, obviously we all think about players and keeping themselves in shape and being ready to go when the tour resumes, which looks like it's going to be mid-June now, according to the tour release yesterday. I'm curious as a caddy, because I know I've been out there in 110-degree days and sometimes you're miserable and your legs hurt. Are you having to – what is the physical toll that being a caddy takes on you? And what are you doing there during this time off to make sure that you're physically ready whenever the game resumes?
Well, it's interesting you should ask. I mean, I'm getting ready to turn 50 here shortly. I've been doing this for a long time, and I tend to ask the guys that are all about my age how their bodies are going. For me, I've actually just got a program. I've been having a little bit of lower back stuff, so I've just got a program from Taylor's trainer. And so he's given me some stuff to do, which I can do here at home. You know, if I've had a few weeks off and I know I'm getting ready to go back to work, typically I'll just try and do some stuff that I'm going to do at work. You know, I'll go out, you know, after our Christmas break this year, you know, a couple of weeks before we went back to work, I just started walking. And it would literally be something as simple as going to the park, putting the headphones on and doing a few miles walking just to, you know, get the cardio going again and so on. You can't really simulate carrying a golf bag around unless you choose to carry a golf bag around.
That is the truth.
You're not taking the bag to the park with you and walking around the park with the golf bag on?
No, sir. My body's beat up enough from doing that. For me, it's more of a cardio issue, just making sure I can get through the day without, you know, getting too tired. And, I see a lot of guys out there who clearly do nothing. that's just never been my way. And then you see some guys out there look like they just got chiseled out of the gym. So, but for me, I just try and make sure I get some walking in and keep the body moving. If there's any part of my body that's starting to hurt a little bit, I'll try and give it some attention. Keeping shape, I've been pretty blessed up to this point in my life that I've had a body that's been fairly functional for me without too many troubles, touch wood. But I guess it varies for different people. For me, it's just a case of keeping on moving and working on flexibility. You know, your knees and your hips and your back hurt when they get too tight to move properly. So if you keep them moving, it doesn't hurt as much.
Yeah, I know. I would get exhausted caddying. Kelsey, did you get worn out whenever you caddied for Hunter or for Taylor?
Well, let's be clear. I mean, caddying for Taylor in the summer, that was an OSU Ping Huffer bag or a ping bag back in the
very different,
the high school days. So, but that tour bag, the last time I caddied for Hunter would have been Tucson in 2005, and then the first time for Taylor would have been Knoxville in 2017. So I took a 12-year hiatus from that tour bag, and I'll never forget. I've told the story a couple of times. After the Wednesday Pro-Am in Knoxville, the next morning I got up to use the restroom and I fell on the floor because as Mal knows, I mean, what's a tour bag probably weigh, Mal?
On any given day, if it's a nice summer day and there's no chance of rain and it's not cool or anything, well then it's probably 30, 32 pounds.
Right.
If it's going to rain and you get the umbrella and the rain gear in there, it's probably closer to 48 or 50.
Yeah, so and up and down, not a lot of level stuff going on. But I fell on the floor at that hotel we were staying in, and it took, I think caddying, if anybody takes an extended period of time off, probably takes 2 to 3 days for the body to kind of sink into, the feet and then the undulation and then carrying the bag. It's not an even weight dispersion. You guys know how the bags look on one shoulder or, some of them have the double strap, but it definitely takes a couple of days of getting going. My wife caddied for me in 2016 at the U.S. Mid-Am up in Pennsylvania, and she's an athlete herself, is a personal trainer, is as fit as a fiddle, and she caddied for me, 4 days in a row up at the U.S. Mid-Am on a golf course that was not flat, and she couldn't believe how tough it was. So like Mal said, there's nothing that you can really do other than maybe getting on the Stairmaster with 50 pounds or a bag on your back and walking up a Stairmaster to prepare you for it. But once you get, in the rhythm and the body kind of adjusts, it's not as bad. But it sure would be nice if the tour bags were those Hoover bags.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Gentlemen, y'all have been phenomenal. A lot of great stuff. Taylor, one more?
Yeah, yeah. I find it funny that Colby brought up the fitness story, because I would like to share this with y'all. Both of y'all, I think, would appreciate this, and the listeners should as well.
Will I appreciate this?
Yes, you will appreciate this. Yes, yes. So I believe it was the 2012 Transmiss tournament. It was held out here at Oaktree National. Colby caddied for me. And I don't know if the tournament's still held this way, but it used to be, it was 18 holes, two days, and then there was a cut. And then after the cut, it was one day, 36 holes. And I was lucky enough to make the cut, and then on the third round,
it was 190 degrees. First off,
yes,
it
was this was the first week of July or second week of July, something like that. It's just brutally hot. So I'm going through the third round, and I'm not playing very well. It's obviously I don't have a shot to contend for the tournament going into the fourth round, and we're going up. I started on the back, so we're walking up the eighth hole at Oaktree National at par three. And I look over at Colby, and I could just tell he's just dead. He's just tired. I mean, he just looks like a sad puppy dog on the side of the road. And I look at him, I said, "Man, dude, if you don't want to carry this last 18, you don't have to. You can go home." And I swear to this day, the only time I've ever seen him with a happier look on his face was his wedding day.
He was so fast, guys. I was in the car so fast.
I went and signed my card, and I looked for him. I couldn't find him. He was already in the car heading home.
Actually, If you got a second there, I'll give you the worst experience and the best experience I've had.
Please do.
Absolutely.
Time.
Go ahead.
So when I was caddying for Tom Hoagie, we qualified to play in the US Open at Chambers Bay. And I'm not sure if television ever did justice to the undulation at that golf course. But it wasn't even so much that it was incredibly hilly. And I would liken it very much almost to Augusta from that perspective. I mean, the undulation is remarkable. You wouldn't really credit it until you saw it. And so we were first group off on Friday. And just to add insult to injury around that, because the course was, you know, it was US Open, massive crowds, and it was typically a course that you would play in golf carts. You know, to get players around safely inside the ropes, they had these bridges built everywhere, and they were almost vertical stairs to get up and over. I mean, it was a massive challenge to walk. And anyway, Friday morning, Tom's first off, and we missed the cut. And I was just about to get in the car in the parking lot, and my phone rang, and one of his closest friends who had qualified for the Open as well, his caddy had fallen ill the night before. He ate some bad food, and he was sick as a dog, and they asked me if I'd go out and do it again in the afternoon. And so I did 36 holes on the Friday at Chambers Bay, and I was about as dead as I've ever been after a day of caddying. It was brutal.
Oh boy, yeah, that sounds yeah, just not pleasant at all. But it makes for a good story, though.
So you said you had the worst and the best. Is that the kind of the worst and the best, getting to do both at Chambers Bay that day?
Well, yeah, I mean, the US Open's always fun, you know, being inside the ropes and all the rest of it, and helping a guy who's, you know, in his first and potentially only ever US Open and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, that part, like I said, I'm a competitor. I get those juices going, and that's what keeps me alive, you know. It was exhausting. It was brutal.
Yeah, I know the feeling for sure. Gentlemen, y'all have been phenomenal. Mal, you've been great. We root for y'all and cannot wait to see you in the winner's circle. So, Kelsey, we'll catch up again soon. And, Mal, we'll have to do this again sometime. Looking forward to seeing y'all hoist the trophy.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks, absolutely.
Guys. Appreciate it.
That was Taylor Gooch's caddy, longtime PGA Tour caddy, Mal Baker, along with Kelsey Klein, turning into a regular here on the 73rd hole. We really appreciate everyone listening. Listen, rate, subscribe. Every single week we release two episodes. Another more great interviews coming your way next week. We've got Sam Humphries. That's going to be dropping either Monday or Tuesday. We're trying to get another interview set up for later next week. So stay with us here on the 73rd hole. Follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Search 73rd hole and you will find us. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening to another edition of the 73rd hole.